All right. Well, good evening to everyone. We're about time to get started, a little bit past time to get started. So if you want to turn to Judges 13, we'll look at the beginning of Samson and kind of finish his story, Lord willing, next Wednesday. So this is the last judge that we look at in this book. There's actually two more judges after Samson, Eli and Samuel. But this is the last one that's concentrated on in the book of Judges. And the book of Judges does not end with the story of Samson. It ends with kind of two miscellaneous stories that happened during the time of the judges that kind of show where Israel got to when every man did what was right in his own eyes. So we'll kind of look at those two stories. So kind of looking forward, the rest of this quarter, we'll look at Samson in two classes, and then we'll look at those two stories at the end of Judges, and we'll finish out on a positive, more positive note, looking at the entire book of Ruth, which of course happened in the time of the judges. So she's kind of the positive light, the Moabite woman, right? The positive light among the Israelites in this time period. A lot of people kind of say this is kind of a downer of a book, especially following the courageous and battle for the Lord in Joshua. But there's certainly a lot we can learn in Judges. And Judges, I think, does an excellent job of telling us what not to do. So this is kind of a book on do the opposite. And so I thought we would start just kind of by way of review, since this is the last judge. We'll look at kind of all the judges up to this point. So there's, of course, our cycle of the judges that we've repeated. I think it's going to be the sixth time that we'll see this cycle repeat itself. So no need to look at that. You can look at that. We've already done that. So looking at the judges, the first judge was Othniel. And I want us to notice kind of maybe the decline in judges. But I want to point out, as you're looking at this chart, kind of the years of slavery contrasted with the years of peace, okay? So kind of we're going to go through this kind of quickly. Ehud enjoyed certainly the longest period of peace after being enslaved to Moab. And then we have Shamgar. Now, of course, some of these judges we just don't know much about. They're given one or two verses about them. So Shamgar, noticed his enemy was the Philistines. And of course, that's going to be the main enemy of Samson as well. This is the only enemy that appears more than once in the book that people are kind of oppressing Israel. So we'll see the Philistines there in the beginning, and then we'll see them at the end as well. Deborah, the Jabin, and really, I guess we say Deborah, who was the kind of the deliverer with Deborah? Not necessarily Deborah, it was more who? Barak, yeah. The Lord called Barak, and Barak said, well, I'll go if you go with me, right? So Barak was the one that kind of led the charge, and we see that his faith highlighted even in Hebrews 11. So that's kind of the first four. And then we keep going, and we see Gideon. He's given three chapters of this book, 6 through 8, but we're beginning to see a decline, right? We saw it with Barak. I don't really want to go, but I'll go if you go with me. So you kind of see that negative with him, but now you see Gideon started out well, ended terribly, right? And who's the next judge? Kind of a trick question. The self-appointed judge in Abimelech, which means what? What does Abimelech mean? Remember?
My father, the king.
Good. My father, the king. So who named him that? Gideon, right? Who said, I don't want to be your king, but I'll sure name my son, father, you know, my father, the king. Acted a lot like a king. So I'm going to skip Abimelech because he's not really a judge, right? Self-appointed judge don't count on my list. So next we go to Tola, which we're given, you know, those kind of verses there. Notice the years of peace there is 23. Jair is kind of the same way with 22 years. And then we studied last week about Jephthah. And Jephthah, again, I would say, it seems to me that the text is pointing out that God did not appoint him to be a judge. It was the people's choice. But did God use him? Sure. Yeah, God used him. You see the Spirit of the Lord coming upon him. And he gave that great deliverance for the people, but then he made that rash vow and kind of did himself in. His story just kind of goes to the dumps as well. Kind of the three there at the end of chapter 13. But you notice the years of peace. Kind of they're just going down, dwindling, that's a good word, dwindling down to just about nothing, especially contrasted with Ehud. You remember how many Ehud, can you remember from that first slide? 80, yeah. So 80 years of peace was by far the most. The next most would be 40, but now we're hitting 7, 10, 8. And then we're going to see Samson. And what stands out to you on that little chart? That's
years of slavery.
Yeah, is 40 years of slavery. I could be mean and ask you what was the next highest, but you'd have to memorize my chart that I just showed you. It's basically 20 years, right? So 20 years, and I think you can check. Was that Deborah? Deborah and Barak, they were enslaved for 20 years. So this is more than double any other time of oppression. And I want us to notice what happens here in chapter 13. So that's my quick review of the judges in this book. Next, I'm just going to look at the story of chapter 13, and then we'll make some points of application. I'll have those above me, and then we'll look at the story of 14 and do the applications. That's kind of how I'm using the PowerPoint or keynote tonight. So look at chapter 13, and I want you to look for something in this chapter that we have not seen before that involves the cycle of the judges. So let me go back. And look at that cycle again, and I want us to notice something that's missing in chapter 13 that's a part of this cycle. Look at verse 1. Now the sons of Israel again did evil in sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. So again, this is the second time that God is using the Philistines to oppress his people, and notice that the Lord is the one that's involved in this. It's not that the Philistines just got super strong and Israel wasn't able to contain them anymore. It's the Lord used them to do this. So you see, they did evil. He sends the oppression. And what's next in the cycle? Okay. It's not here. I note I only hit verse 1, but I'm going to tell you, verse 2, 3, 4, 5, it's not there. Why? Why don't you think they, or in looking at the degression of judges, what are they not even doing?
Those aren't noted because they don't exist in this timeline.
Sorry.
Those aren't noted because they don't exist. I said timeline. They don't exist in this part of the cycle. Those have fallen off. They're not there at all.
So absolutely.
Go through those steps.
Yeah. It's amazing that at this point, when they're oppressed, they don't even cry out to the Lord anymore. Go back. And I meant to do this earlier. Look at chapter 10. And this is right before the story of Jephthah. Look at verses 6 and 7 again. Then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, served the Baals and the Asheroth and the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines. Thus they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. The anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of the Philistines and into the hands of the sons of Ammon. Jephthah takes care of Ammon, right? That's kind of chapters 10 through 12. The hands of the Philistines, that's what Samson is going to kind of zero in on. It could be that while Jephthah, while God is kind of dealing with Jephthah and Ammon, he's also at the same time dealing with Samson and the Philistines. If you were to tally up and do all the math of the times of peace plus the times of slavery and just do that for every single judge, you would end up with more years in the time period of the judges than the period of the judges. I don't know if that made any kind of sense to you, but the period of the judges lasted, let's say, 400 years. If you add up all those numbers, it'd be 600 years. So there's 200 years missing, which seems to imply that a judge is a judge in this territory. Well, there's another judge in Dan, right? Where Samson's in Dan, which would be north. So there's kind of the period of the judges are happening kind of simultaneously. Does that make sense? To kind of make sense of all that. So I throw that as a possibility. Just kind of looking at 10, 6, and 7, while God is taking care of Ammon, he's also maybe taking care of the Philistines at the same time. I'll just give you that to think about. Okay, so what's missing is they're crying out to the Lord, yet the Lord still saves them. Remember that verse in chapter 10 that the Lord had pity on them? It's been a long time of slavery, and so he's going to deliver them, even though the text does not record anything about them asking, Lord, can you deliver us? He's just going to do that. And he picks Samson to do that. And he's probably, I would say, probably the worst judge that Israel has as far as morality is concerned. Chapter 13 really doesn't deal with Samson. Samson shows up in the second to last verse of this chapter. It's really dealing with Samson's mom and dad, Manoah and Mrs. Manoah. We're not given her name. So look at kind of verse 2 through 7 where we are introduced to them. And what do we learn about Mrs. Manoah there in verse 2 in Manoah? What stands out? Sorry. Okay, good. So one, they're barren, not able to have any children. What else stands out to you? It's kind of a uh-oh. Maybe I asked that kind of. Yeah, so they're what tribe are they from? Dan. What do we know about Dan from the first chapter of this book? Yeah, they were the worst. Among all the tribes, Judah did really well, and it just kind of declines. Remember that chapter 1? And Dan, like, they couldn't even drive out anybody. Where he had some of the tribes drive out some, and then some of the tribes, the enemies, drove them out, so they were not letting you have the mountains. You can have the valley. But then we get to Dan, where they're not able to do anything. So the fact that they are from Dan, that's not a great sign, just kind of with the history of Dan. Does that mean they're terrible people because they're from Dan? Well, no. But it's just, they are from Dan, and they're barren. So again, we see God using the most least likely of people to deliver his people from. Here's this couple that doesn't have any children. They're from Dan. They're way up north, and yet God uses this couple to bring about a deliverer. Any thoughts or comments? Kind of just throw, looking at verses 1 and 2 there. That makes sense. Okay, so the angel comes to who? Mrs. Manoah. And I don't know what to make of that, but comes not to Manoah, but to his wife, and basically says, I'm going to give you a son. And so this must have been pretty exciting news. Unable to have children, now they're going to be able to have a son. Who's that going to remind you of? Who's barren and then going to have a son? Kind of that remind you of anyone? Okay, Hannah and Samuel and New Testament. Yeah, Elizabeth with John the Baptist, and the angel kind of shocks Zechariah. You're going to have a son at your old age. Your prayer has been answered. Yeah, Abraham, Sarah is another one. Good. So we kind of God using them. Instructions for her in verse 4, be careful not to drink wine or strong drink. And this is, again, a big maybe. Maybe that implies she had been doing those things. Or maybe it just make sure you keep staying away from wine and strong drink. And secondly, don't eat any unclean thing. Seems the emphasis is what? Why is the angel telling her not to do these things?
The child is going to be special.
Yeah.
Before
birth. Should kind of that your. Yeah, it's kind of keep the child pure, even in the womb, right? So, and then verse 5, instructions for her son. No razor shall come upon his head, and he shall be a Nazarite. So what are the three rules of a Nazarite? You remember? No wine. Don't do any haircuts. And the third one, that he violates, dead. You can't be around dead things or a dead person. Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's right. So stay away from anything that comes from the vine. So this is kind of he's unique Nazarite. Normally, if you look at number 6, a Nazarite kind of makes himself a Nazarite. I'm looking at the clock. Not to be an auctioneer up here to get through all this, but usually someone says, I'm going to be a Nazarite. I'm going to dedicate myself to the Lord for a period of time. Samson is a Nazarite for how long? He's kind of a lifelong, right? Lifelong Nazarite, and he's a Nazarite from birth. Maybe Samuel, John the Baptist would be maybe a couple of others that had this same idea. But Manoah's wife tells her husband what happened in verses 6 and 7. And then verse 8, Manoah prays to the Lord, O Lord, please let the man of God whom you have sent come to us again, that he may teach us what to do for the boy who is to be born. So he prays to the Lord. It's interesting, right? God already told them, or Mrs. Manoah, what to do. But God is graceful and answers his request. And who meets the angel again? Mrs. Manoah. That's interesting. Please let me see this angel, and boom, he sends him to the wife again. But Mrs. Manoah goes and gets her husband, and basically he asks, what are we to do with the boy? And he basically repeats the answer that he gave to her his wife. Let the woman pay attention to all that I said. And then basically verse 14 repeats what he previously said to his wife. And then the angel departs in verses 15 to 20. And basically Manoah says, can we have a meal together? Can I detain you and I can kill this young goat and we can have this meal? So he declines their invitation and says, if they prepare a burnt offering to make to the Lord, then I'll stay. So Manoah wanted to honor this man of God. So for Manoah did not know that he was an angel of the Lord, which is interesting, right? You would usually think if you see an angel, you know it's an angel. Well, that's not always the case. So Manoah wants to honor the angel, and he asks, well, what is your name? Well, my name is too wonderful for you to know, so doesn't really answer that. Too wonderful to comprehend, I think is the idea. So Manoah gives an offering to the Lord, and he does it, and what happens that scares Manoah? Yeah, that's pretty unique. What does that remind you of in Judges? Any other story where that similar thing happened? With Gideon, yeah. Gideon, when he kind of pours the broth and does the sacrifice there, and it's kind of the similar things happens there. And what happened with Gideon when he saw that? What was his reaction? You remember? I'm going to die. I've seen the face of the Lord. What's Manoah's reaction? I'm going to die. I've seen the face of the Lord. So it's pretty consistent. And so no one can, I'm this close. I've seen God. I'm going to die, which is probably taken the idea from Exodus 33. No one can see my face and live. So God covered Moses' face and he saw God's back, kind of that story. So he's panicking and jumping to all these conclusions. And in verse 23, what are some of the arguments Mrs. Manoah gives as to why it doesn't make much sense that they're going to die? What are some of their arguments? Okay, so for one, God accepted this offering. Secondly,
made him a promise
that I'm going to give birth. It'd be hard to do that if I'm dead. That's a pretty good argument, right? So all these arguments of really, God allowed us to see these things. So why would he kill us? So that just proves women are more logical than men, right? You've heard it here. All right, so we have birth of Samson given forth in 24 to 25. God's word through his angel is fulfilled. They name him Samson, which means of the sun. And God blessed him. So you're ending this chapter, and what are your thoughts about Samson? Kind of all this momentum. The Lord blesses him. What are you thinking about Samson? Is it going to be good or bad?
It's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything kind of look. I mean, this is the first time that we have seen a judge from the womb, right? And all these things happen. And I mean, he's going to be a Nazarite. He's going to be dedicated to the Lord. And the Lord's blessing them and in fulfilling this great birth. And so it's going to be great. It's going to be a great story. Well, I'm setting all that up, right, to get us all down. Just building us up to tear it all down. Interesting, and you can think about this, the similarities between Samson and Israel. I'm going to give away the story of Samson because you already know it. Samson went after foreign wives, just as Israel went after foreign gods. The Lord abandoned Samson when he didn't realize it, much like Israel, or God abandoned Israel, seemingly when they did not realize it. Both Samson The person and Israel, the nation, were both enslaved to the Philistines. And just as Israel gets further away from God, so does its deliverers. And certainly in the case of Samson, he just starts his life dedicated to the Lord and just goes further and further from him. Let's look at some applications, and I'm going to kind of speed through this to get where I want to be. The first one that we can look at in chapter 13 is be right to raise right. It's impressive to me that Mrs. Manoah and Manoah said, or God told them, this is what you need to be in order to raise this son. The angel's original instructions in verses 4 and 5, the angel tells the mother not to partake of the vine, eat anything unclean. Angel tells Mrs. Manoah not to have the child's head shaved, for he is a Nazarite. And then again, you see the same instructions given in verses 12 through 14. I appreciate Manoah in asking, well, help us. What do we need to do? What are our instructions in order to raise this child, this blessing of a child that you are giving us? Sometimes I think we can focus all our attention on the wrong person. We sometimes want our children to love the Lord and to be deeply in His Word and to have this great prayer life, when that's not true of us. What if our children modeled us perfectly? Had all of our prayer habits, had the same study habits that we have, served people the way that we serve. If we are to be a good example for our children, and that kind of hit home with me, if my kids acted exactly like me, is that something I'd be proud of? The Apostle Paul, imitate me as I imitate Christ. If we want our children to be strong Christians and helping others, we need to show them what that looks like. Now, does that guarantee success? Certainly not. Ezekiel 18 points that out very powerfully. But am I the kind of model example I need to be, especially as a dad, as a leader of the home? Am I setting that tone? Am I setting that example? Seems to me they wanted, give us the instructions, tell us how we need to live to raise this boy. The next one kind of goes along that same line as Manoah's attitude towards parenting is, God, give me the instructions. And lucky for us, God gave us the instructions. Do we have Manoah's attitude? Pardon the phrase, be all you can be. Kind of setting up the life of Samson. He had everything going for him, it seems like. In this chapter, he's going to be Nazarite. He's going to be dedicated to the Lord. And I know of me, I am greatly blessed. Lord has blessed me with faithful grandparents, with faithful parents, with wonderful siblings that I can look up to and say, man, I want to be more like Michael, Matt, and Carrie. And does God expect more of me than maybe someone who has not had all those blessings? I would say yes. Am I living up to that? Am I using all of my talents and blessings that God has blessed me with throughout my whole life? Am I using that for the Lord? Samson did not. He had all these blessings that he just kind of wasted away. So let's be like that five-talent man, that two-talent man. Says, I'm going to use whatever God gives me to His glory, to His purpose. Only got 15 minutes left, but I hate to take up all your time me talking. So any thoughts or comments along these lines, or any other applications or thoughts you had looking at chapter 13? Yes, sir.
I think there's also a possibility when you look at this story and you look through the judges and you see this faithful couple,
that were given instructions by the Lord and followed them. And so we have to see that picture too of a faithful remnant that the Lord had.
Good. Yeah. In a time of just total wickedness, not serving the Lord, not even wanting the Lord, not crying out to the Lord, you have this faithful couple who wants to serve the Lord, who wants to raise their son in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. So there's always a remnant, always a faithful remnant. Yes, sir, in the back.
Yeah, I think it's also a good illustration of what election isn't, which is a great point in our modern thinking. Your point about him mimicking Israel is great. Israel was elect, but election does not guarantee salvation, and it does not determine salvation. God often uses those who he elects who are not following him at all. And we see that here with Samson. He's chosen from birth, and he continues to violate all the things he's been asked to do. And God still uses him, just as he used Israel, to accomplish his will. And Romans 9 through 11 deals with some of this in more detail. But God's faithful to his promises. That doesn't mean that you can just violate the will of God and do whatever you want. Because you're elect or chosen, that all is good. That's clearly not the message at all. As you said, he expects a lot more of Samson than what actually happens, and that's part of the story. We see his downfall because he is supposed to be separated to the Lord, and yet he actually fails to do that in many ways. God's still able to use him for his own purposes, but Samson is an example of what it looks like to not be what you're supposed to be.
Right. Good point. Let's look at chapter 14 before time totally gets away from me. So I have all this build up with Samson. So verses 1 through 4, Samson's, we kind of break this chapter down into these different trips that Samson makes. So Samson goes down to Timnah, and notice that word down. I think it's talking about physical, geographical, he went down. But I think throughout this chapter, we'll see Samson go down. We see that in verse 1, verse 5, verse 10, and verse 19. Samson went down. And I would say there's a point in that. He kept going down, spiraling down. So Samson goes down to Timnah. Timnah was a city located right on the border of Philistia and the territory of Dan. So Samson saw a woman, and that's going to be his downfall, right? As we know. So Samson, what's Samson's request to his parents? Yes. I always read verse 2 as like a caveman would read it. Therefore, get her for me as a wife. I don't know why, but that's what stands out to me. You can read it like a caveman or not. That kind of seems the idea. I saw her, and I really want her, so go get her for me. Maybe a spoiled person, right, would say that. So what's Samson's parents' reply? Manoah and Mrs. Manoah, how do they reply to that in verse 3? Yeah, well, we have plenty of women. You go see them. and surely that'd be better. So why are you going after this uncircumcised Philistine? And Samson's response to that? Get her for me, right? for she looks good to me. So that's, again, that's how you're to say it. So on the basis of Samson desiring this Philistine woman is what quality about her? Her outward beauty. So we'll make a point on that. But what do we learn kind of to Brent's point, verse 4? This was from the Lord. Lord was going to use this to deliver Israel. So he's going to use Samson's flaws for his glory. And we see God doing that throughout the Bible. Brent made that point very well. So, verses 5 through 9, where do you see Samson that kind of puts out a red flag in verses 5 and 6?
Vineyards.
In the vineyards. Why is that bad? He's not supposed to be anywhere near, right? Or he's not supposed to have anything from the vine. So let's go as close to the vine as I possibly can. That's a good idea. So I think a good question for him would be, what in the world are you doing in the vineyards or near the vineyard? So verse 7, well, Samson is met by a young lion, tears it apart with his bare hands. Kind of gives you the strength of this man. How do you, kind of a side note, how do you picture Samson? As this big muscle man, normally, right, that's all the drawings in the kids' coloring pages. I just wonder if he's has as many muscles as I do, which is not many. And like God gives him this strength, and boom, I'm able to do these amazing things. I don't know, for you to think about, free of charge. Samson goes and finds. Yeah, that's right. I just want to get rid of all those coloring books. Is my goal. So Samson goes, finds his woman in verse 7. Samson arrives at the same conclusion. She looked good to Samson, kind of emphasizing that. Samson then gets something to eat. So he goes the same path, goes right back to the vineyards on his way home. And he sees some honey in the dead lion and takes and eats the honey. So that's why it's there, right? So I can eat it. So according to Leviticus chapter 5 and verse 2, by touching a dead animal, what does he become? He becomes unclean. So it's debated. Did he break the Nazarite vow by touching a dead animal? That's something I'm not going to debate that with you, but that's certainly a possibility. Number 6:6, a Nazarite was not allowed to touch a dead person, but certainly you see him going in the wrong direction. Samson does not tell his mom or dad. And so maybe the idea of giving them something unclean, and now they're unclean. So verses 10 through 18, and sorry for speeding through this, but Manoah lets Samson marry in verse 10. Notice again, he goes down, lets his son marry this uncircumcised Philistine. What does that tell you about Manoah? Maybe not able to stand up to his son. Just going to let him do, if he really wants to, I'll let him. We need to be better than that. And then the Philistines give Samson 30 companions, maybe representing his groomsmen. Seems to be people Samson has never met before. And so what's Samson's idea in verses 12 to 14? And I'll ask you, maybe what is his motive? So he makes this riddle, right? If you can solve this riddle, then I'll give you 30 pieces or 30 clothes, right? But if you can't, you give me 30 clothes. So what do you think his motive is in that? Okay, a wise guy. I'd say he goes beyond that. Are they going to be able to get his riddle? It's impossible, right? So what does Samson want? What's that? A fight? No, I don't know.
He wants the stuff.
I think so. I think he wants, hey, if I can get 30 new things of clothes, perfect. And I'll get it from these Philistines. It'd be great. So 30 new clothes for me. Yes, sir.
That would be humiliating to them.
Yeah, they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, do they bite on this riddle? Surely between 30 of us, we can figure out this, you know, this Israelite riddle that he could come up with. So they do. And of course, from the eater, the Hebrew, original Hebrew, from the eater out came eat, from the strong out came sweet. There, verse 15, then it came about on the what day? What did some of your versions say? Fourth day. Does anyone say seventh day? Yes. So there's a textual question whether this is a four or a seven. It makes more sense to me that it's the fourth day. All you Hebrew scholars know that a four in Hebrew looks almost identical to a seven in Hebrew. So there's a little bit of debate on is it the fourth day or seventh day. I'll let you figure that out. It seems to me the fourth day. The men are not able to figure it out, so what do? Let's go to the fiance and see if she can get it out of Samson. And what's their motivation, or what's her motivation to get it out of Samson?
We'll kill you if you don't.
Okay. We'll kill you and... Yeah, so I'd always read or always thought about in your father's house. Is that the physical house, or is it like David's house, right, would apply to his family? So I'll just say it's probably his family, that your whole family we're going to kill. And did she believe him? Yeah, that kind of tells you a little bit about the Philistines. So I got 2 minutes. So she is able to get it out of him, just nags him almost to death. And fine, I'll give you. And then they're able to somehow give him his riddle. And he just goes on a rampage, kills 30 Philistines. Here's your clothes. And Samson just kind of is done and just leaves. And meanwhile, Samson's wife was given to his companion. I'm going to look at three applications in about 3 seconds, so I'll just get them all to you. We need to be very careful about beauty is only skin deep. What are we emphasizing? Our culture so much emphasizes good looks and pay lots of money, right? To make sure you look good. And a lot of times, young men, that's we are enthralled with that. We need to be very careful what we look at. I made a covenant with my eyes. We could spend a lot of time talking about this particular sin, and I think it would be a good use of our time. Make sure we stay away, that we are looking on things that are pure. Flee from sin. There's two sins that God tells us to flee from: sexual immorality and idolatry. Run away. Samson did not do that. He got as close as he could to that. There's a neat little story that emphasizes that. A father tells his son he does not want him to swim in the creek today. A few hours later, his son comes home with his swimming trunks all dripping wet. The father asked his son if he had been swimming in the creek, to which he said, yes. Well, why did you swim in the creek after I told you not to? Son answers, because when I was standing by the creek with my swimming trunks in my hand, I was overcome by the temptation. Well, why in the world were you by the creek with your swimming trunks in your hand? Well, just in case the temptation of swimming overcame me. Run away from sin. And the way of sin, the progression or digression of sin in this is we keep going down. And that's what we see from Samson. Sorry I had to rush through that. I'd encourage you to look at these. Again, read these two chapters in preparation for next week, and we'll finish the sad story of Samson. Thank you for your attention and good comments.